My name is Mike Thornton. This is Full Logic Reverse. We hope you'll stay tuned. And joining us from the Lone Star State today is Jerry Politex. Jerry, thank you for being with us.
Glad to be here.
Well, we appreciate that you were able to be with us. I happened to turn into a real audio interview that you did on Democracy Now! Not too long ago. It was very interesting when you were talking about G.W. Bush there. And, of course, that's why you have joined us today to talk about who G.W. is. And from your website, Bushwatch, certainly you seem to be probably one of the most knowledgeable people about who this man who would be president is. Can we talk a little bit about how you got involved with doing Bushwatch? I mean, what brought you to do this?
Well, it turned out I had some time, and I had a computer, and I have spent the last 20 years in Texas. I actually live in Austin, and so I was, in that sense, close to the action, and I had some feelings about George being able to make it past the governorship, and there were some rumblings that he was interested in doing something more, and so I thought that was a good time to start Bushwatch. As a matter of fact, when I started it, he didn't even have anything online himself. There was a kind of a wimpy governor's page, kind of a gray background and a poorly graphically designed picture and telephone number and address, and that was about it. So I thought that was a good time to start, to kind of get it on the ground floor.
Well, certainly it's a very extensive website that you have at Bushwatch, and certainly has a lot more information about G.W. Bush than it seems like the vast majority of the mainstream press is willing to ask the man himself.
Well, what I tell people is I put everything that I can out there, and hope people visit and pick up on it and run with it. And I think the word is spreading as we're evolving with more websites, and, of course, just in general, people in the media being more and more interested in George. They come to sites like mine to check things out and to get a sense of what might be a topic they can focus on.
We're talking with Jerry Politex, who is the web administrator of Bushwatch. Jerry, who is George W. Bush? Can you tell us a little bit about who this man is?
Well, he's complicated, as most people are,
right.
Particularly most people who want to become president. I thought what I'd do is give you a kind of overview of his life. Really, there hasn't been a place that's done this, and I assume you may or may not know, he's claiming that he's working on a book. He's identified it initially as an autobiography, but the last time he's mentioned it, it's become a kind of autobiographical sketchbook and summary of the policies that he's interested in. So God knows what it's going to look like
right.
When it finally comes out. But, of course, you know, you can look into the books that his about his father, particularly Herbert Parmet's George Bush, and the mother has a book out, Barbara. And so you can put things together and get a sense of who George Bush is. Also, there have been a number of magazine issues devoted to him, most notably Texas Monthly. And on my website, I have a list of the magazine issues devoted to him. So that's a good place to start. With respect to my website, by the way, it's easy to get to. It's www.bushwatch.com. So it's a fairly straightforward address, and you can find quite a bit on Bush at the site. I thought what I'd do, though, is give a kind of thumbnail sketch of where he's been and where he's gone, so that anything we talk about after that, we have some kind of context to put it in.
Please do.
If that's okay with you.
You bet, absolutely.
Okay, great. He had a birthday the other day, turned 53. on July the 6th. So I guess in terms of his family, he's the Yankee Doodle Dandy. And he was born in New Haven. His father, of course, we know, the ex-president of the United States. What some people may not know is that George Herbert's father, George Herbert being George W.'s father, George Herbert's father was a U.S. Senator, Prescott Bush, and the family comes from moneyed New England surroundings. And George Herbert, the father, did something pretty radical right after the war. He was in New Haven at Yale, and George W. was born in 46. 2 years later, he picked up the family and moved to Midland, Texas. And Midland, Texas was the place to be at that point if you were interested in being a real down-home, basic bucks kind of entrepreneur. That's where the action was. That's where the oil fields were booming. And that's what George Herbert wanted to do. And so over the next, 10, 15 years, he started pretty much from the bottom, of course, with his family's money, and worked his way up.
Well, it's probably important for people who don't know, and perhaps I'm mistaken, but Prescott Bush was an integral part in creating the Marshall Plan, correct?
That I don't know.
As my understanding, Prescott Bush and Prescott Bush is, you know, of course, our former president's father was very, very much instrumental in helping to create the whole plan to rebuild Europe after World War II himself. So this is a family who comes from being involved in lots and lots of political and economic dealings. I mean, you know, it's a family legacy. I mean, correct?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, some people have claimed that George W. is following the principle of noblesse oblige. In other words, if you're coming from a family that's gotten much out of the country, you put things back in by contributing to public service and the like.
Mm-hmm.
George hasn't expressed that because his marketing program, if you will, is selling him as a guy from Midland, Texas, you know, just one of the guys from Midland, Texas.
Right.
He's going out of his way to keep his family background a secret. Of course, he can't really, but at least he's not talking about it. So the noblesse oblige idea is an interesting one. However, it's nothing... It's not something that George W. is going to talk much about.
We're talking with Jerry Politics, who administers Bushwatch.com. Jerry, we have people who want to talk to you on the phone. Do you want to take a call?
Sure.
Caller, you're live on the air.
Yeah, I want to ask Jerry, so far, I haven't heard anything that would turn off a real, genuine, dyed-in-the-wool Republican who is within the top 10 richest people in the country, who would like to see unions, if not busted, at least severely restricted, who would like to see some kind of a depression where those with the most money could buy at the lowest possible price vast amounts of valuable resources
Let me ask you a question. What is your point, please?
The point is that so far I haven't heard anything that would indicate that this guy is some kind of Hitler, some kind of a nouveau Nazi, something that would really cause people to vomit at hearing.
Well, since you put it that way, let me get back to Jerry. Thank you for calling in. I don't think that we're necessarily here to, like, you know, try and prove that G.W. Bush is some sort of nouveau Hitler or anything. I mean, certainly he does have some fairly questionable activities in his past. I would like us to talk about those, but I don't think we're here to try and prove that GW is the devil incarnate. I mean, is that what we're doing here, Jerry?
No, not at all.
I mean, he may be. I mean, I don't know. I don't know the man, but I mean, I don't think that's necessarily what we're trying to do. But Jerry, let's do this. I do want to move to some specifics if we can.
Sure.
And one of those being is I understand that G.W. Bush, who is almost being anointed as the Republican nominee for president in 2000, certainly has some questionable activities, in particular around his sale of the Texas Rangers baseball team. Is that correct?
Yeah, right.
Talk a little bit about that, if you will.
Right. Okay. Let me stop on the biography for a while, and
okay.
We'll come back to it if it gets interesting. But let me jump ahead to California.
Go ahead.
I was in California the other day. Okay?
You bet. You go right ahead.
All right. And he had something very interesting to say, and it hasn't been really picked up by the media yet, but there's going to be an article in U.S. News coming up. It's probably out now. It's dated July the 19th. But anyway, the article reads, "Is it wrong to call him George Dumbya?" D-U-M-B-Y-A Bush.
W.
Dumbya Bush.
Dumbya Bush, okay.
Is it wrong to call him George Dumbya Bush? And the article goes off into politics and really doesn't talk much about George's intelligence. And I really think that this is a central factor, and that's why I was getting into the biography, because it seems to me that if you look at George's life as an overview, what you find is a very social person, a very personable person. He gets along well with groups. He tends to be able to lead groups, but he's not really all that bright. Okay? Does that mean that he's not bright enough to be president? Well, that's up for grabs. I think that's what's going to be considered. But the fact of the matter is that he's very much aware of this. For example, when he ran for governor the first time, his political guru, Karl Rove, went out of his way to keep him away from the press, debates, conferences of any sort, because the theory was the less people really knew about him, the better off he was. And if you'll notice that this has been the strategy right up to the time that he left the state at the beginning of June. And if you'll remember, during that period, we had a kind of a Star Wars scenario where people were coming down and visiting and filling him with knowledge. Okay, you may remember that period.
Yes.
It went on for months. You know, we had all of the great minds of the planet coming down to Austin to fill George with knowledge. The fact of the matter is that George is an administrator, not really a thinker. The question is, how much thought do you need to give in order to be a good administrator? Do you just listen to what other people say and flip a coin? I mean, is that the nature of the game? I think not. Well, anyway, the more we're finding out about George on the Huskies, the more he's out there on the campaign trail talking, the more people are picking up on little errors. They're not big errors, you know, like calling Greeks Grecians, okay, or saying he didn't realize how small Israel was. These are small things, but you begin to wonder. I mean, some commentators have said that Bush is a historian.
Right.
And I guess they're basing that on the fact that he has an undergraduate degree in history from Yale. But when he was on C-SPAN in the longest interview to date at that point, which was a few months ago, he was specifically asked what kind of history books he was reading, and he couldn't think of a single one. The best he could come up with is he remembered that he was reading in an undergraduate course a book on flooding on the Mississippi. Okay? So this is beginning to build, and the strategy that the Bush people are employing, unlike Gore, is to try to nip these things in the bud. they want to get these things out of the way before the fall when, quote, people are really listening, okay? So if they can address these problems now and satisfy the media that it's not a problem, they're way ahead of the game. And that's what they're trying to do on this how smart is George question, okay? And this is what George said in California. He said, I've been in positions where I've made decisions my whole life in business and in politics, and I know how to bring people together. I don't know how I learned that, but I just did. Just because I pronounce the name of a country doesn't mean I don't know how to lead. And the way I read this is what he's saying here is, I may not be the brightest light on the street, but I know how to lead.
Well, see, that leads me to this question. I mean, as I understand it, and you know, perhaps I'm wrong, but as I understand it, for example, the sale of the Texas Rangers baseball team, that in essence, G.W. Bush made a tremendous amount of money on what for anybody else would have been a failing business deal.
Right.
But because he was G.W. Bush with either his connections or people wanting to have goodwill with him or perhaps with his father or his father's friends or G.W.'s friends, that, you know, that Bush makes money off of this.
Right, right.
I also understand that during, for example, the Vietnam War, very often Republicans bring up the issue regarding Clinton that, well, you know, what does he know about leading a military? He didn't go to fight in Vietnam and all that. And I also understand that GW had some strings pulled for him that allowed him to jump over a number of perhaps more legitimate candidates for Coast Guard flight school or something like that, which in essence kept him out of the Vietnam War as well. So, you know, when I hear Bush talking about, well, I know how to lead, I mean, it really seems to me that if anything's being led, it's basically GW being led by his nose. I mean, does that make sense to you?
As I've said on Bush Watch, the best leading Bush does is when he gets someone else to lead.
We're talking with Jerry Politics of Bush Watch. This is Full Logic Reverse. I'm your host, Mike Thornton. Stay tuned for contact and ordering information at the end of the program. Are you ready for another phone call, Jerry?
Sure.
Caller, you're live on the air.
Hi. You've been talking about the Rangers deal, which was a little bit shady. But what I found more disturbing is something that most people seem to have forgotten, and that is George W. Bush's involvement in the savings and loan scandal, which in total cost the American taxpayers nearly $1 trillion. I know that wasn't him alone doing that, but I would like Mr. Politic to comment on his involvement in the savings and loan scandal.
Please do. Thank you for calling in.
Okay. George W. Jr. Was not involved in the savings
and loan
scandal.
That was Jeb, wasn't it?
Okay.
That was Jeb Bush, wasn't it?
That was Neil.
Oh, Neil. I'm sorry.
Neil. Now, Neil's an interesting figure in all of this, and some people are even starting to talk if George gets the presidency, Neil will get a position. I'm very doubtful of that. The father felt very, Herbert, you know, felt very badly about Neil and the savings and loan scandal. Some media called him the poster child for the savings and loan scandal. The fact of the matter is, as far as I can recall anyway, that was the one that Neil was involved in. The Silverado was one of the largest of the moneyed scandals of them all.
Mm-hmm.
And George was not involved in any savings and loan situations, but the scandal that George was involved in, which was about the size of the savings and loan scandal, was his sale of stock of an oil company that he made in 1990, the Harkin Energy stock. Basically, he was accused by some of insider trading. Unfortunately, the accusation was taken to a board of people who had been put in office by his father. And he was actually George W. Jr. He was actually not involved with the company whose stock he sold, except for being a member of the board. There is a kind of pattern if you look at all of the Bush brothers, Warren, Neil, Jeb, and George.
Sounded like four to me.
Okay, right. Yeah, the pattern is that their names are used. They're kind of fronts for the people who are actually doing the business. And this was the point that I was getting at. I mean, I find it interesting that George sets up a criteria to avoid some of the criticism, but he's unable to really satisfy the criteria that he himself proposes. He says, look at my leadership abilities, don't look at my intelligence. Well, if you look at his leadership abilities, his oil companies failed. They didn't turn a profit. And then when he sold the stock, he was accused of insider trading. And then he took the very money that he made on the sale of the stock, $600,000, and that's all the money he invested in the Texas Rangers. And basically, what he ended up doing with the Texas Rangers was being a front man for another fairly complicated and lucrative business dealing. But so, at the heart of the business dealing was the fact that the city where the stadium was built condemned private property so that the stadium could be built. The irony here is that, at about that time, George, as well, prior to being governor, but when he became governor, when he was running, he was talking about the sanctity of public of private property and how the government has no right to private property. So there's a contradiction throughout. Two, actually. One, he says, look at my leadership skills, and if you look at his leadership skills, they're lacking. They're poor. And two, if you look at what he says, it seems that he says one thing and does the other. That's why sometimes I call him George Doublespeak. And it's really hard. I mean, he's very slippery. He's very slick.
You know, Bush just recently ducked some 6,000 minority reporters, refused to even talk to them. So, I mean, he really is continuing on this path of trying to duck anybody who will ask him any serious questions. The other part is that while in many respects GW sounds as though he's kind of a dish rag in some, you know, in some ways, and really kind of being led and used as a front man. I mean, he's also taken some action. In particular, I believe he vetoed a bill that would have given more money to help defend indigent defendants in Texas. He's also come out as being anti-abortion. And of course, Texas is a state that has one of the highest execution rates in the country. I mean, that there is something to this man, I think, in the fact that he is, you know, making some decisions that really affect people's lives.
Oh, of course. Of course. And I don't know, what do you want me to refer to first?
I guess.
Why don't I do the Willie Horton thing? Because I think Bush's vetoing of that particular bill is his Willie Horton.
Do the Willie Horton.
Okay, the Willie Horton is what many people say was the cause of Dukakis's downfall against George Herbert. Very early in the elections, in the first time that George ran for president, he was behind. Even though he was sitting in the Reagan White House at the time, he was way behind Dukakis. And one thing that pulled it out for him and gave him 4 years as a president was the fact that he accused Dukakis of allowing a convicted murderer named Willie Horton to go out on the streets under a Massachusetts parole agreement.
Right.
And most people who heard that found that was not acceptable. And so George was able to get quite a bit of mileage out of that. Well, the fact of the matter is, I think that what George Jr. did in the case of vetoing that particular bill was equally scandalous. Equally scandalous because there are many, many instances of people who are arrested in the state of Texas who rot in jail without the help of an attorney. There are poor people who don't seem to be able to get an attorney to represent them within the time that one would think would be civilized, which many people say 72 hours after you're arrested. Well, the bill didn't even say 72 hours. It said 20 days. 20 days. And part of the bill said, if you can't get a lawyer for this person within 20 days, you take it before a committee, and the committee gets a lawyer. Well, what George did to veto the bill was he said, we can't have possible murderers out on the streets just walking around after 20 days because we couldn't get that personal lawyer. That was his rationale.
Right.
Now, there was only one group of people against that law, and those were the judges, because the implication of the bill was the judges weren't doing their job in getting the lawyers.
Well,
so they were going to set up a different way of going about it.
Right. And certainly, I mean, this comes from someone who bills himself as a so-called compassionate conservative. Jerry, our phone lines are ringing off the hook. I'd like to take another call.
Sure.
Caller, you're live on the air.
Yeah, hi. How are you doing?
Please make it brief.
Okay, I will. First of all, I think that you do, just being a little nitpicky stuff. You know, everyone has their faults, they have their good sides, this, that, whatever. I think a lot of the things that you've been talking about are really irrelevant. I think the key issue is that who is the man that's going to lead America, USA, our country, into the next millennium, and who is the man that has the smarts to know how to do that, and that is the question that I have for you. That's what I wanted to know.
Well,
who do you think is the best guy that's going to do this?
Who do we have to choose from?
Well, that's what I'm asking you.
Well, I mean, if you're asking...
Pick me!
Well, I'll tell you what, if I have to choose between you, Al Gore, and G.W. Bush, I'll pick you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for calling in. Caller, you're live on the air.
Compare Bush's morality and his so-called scandalous behavior to Clinton's, who almost got impeached.
Okay, well, we can probably do that. I mean, I don't think no one here is defending Clinton. I mean, I don't think that's what we're doing. We're just trying to, I think, shed a little light on who this man is, who, as far as I can tell, is being anointed to be the Republican nominee, and yet nobody knows anything about him unless you're talking to people like Jerry Politics. Jerry, there's another foot call coming in.
Sure.
Caller, you're live on the air.
Hi, you guys were talking about choices for president.
We could choose you.
Well, I did want to add that Heather Harder is running for president, and not a lot of people know about her.
I didn't know that.
She's doing a grassroots campaign.
Who is Heather Harder?
Heather Harder, she's running on the Democratic ticket. She calls herself a Jefferson Democrat, and she's from Indiana, and she was actually on Chamberlain's show, and she's running for president, so that is another option that we have.
Okay, well, good. Well, thank you for informing us about that. Jerry, are you still with us?
Yes.
We just have really a couple of minutes left, and perhaps what we can do is arrange to have you on the program again to further explore G.W. Bush.
That'd be fun. I feel that I've just gotten started.
Oh, and you have just gotten started. Unfortunately, the clock does these things to us. We heard this story about GW getting all of this money, $35 million and all of that, and that there are some people trying to put forth that he got all this money because people just think he'd be really great. It almost sounds to me from what you're saying, though, that perhaps one of the reasons why he got so much money is that people who have that kind of money and that kind of power see him as being a person who will more or less just simply be a front for their interest, and that he'll actually be very easy to manipulate for their purposes.
Oh yeah, I call him the first president as Mater D. I mean, you know, he's going to show people to the money table, and he's going to tell them what his policy people in the kitchen have cooked up.
Jerry, we just have enough time for you to give out the URL for Bushwatch.com.
It's www.bushwatch, that's one word, .com.
Jerry Politics of Bushwatch.com, thank you for being with us on the program. We'll get back with you and set another date. That's it for this edition of the program. I'm your host, Mike Thornton. If you're interested in copies of this or other Full Logic Reverse programs, you can contact us via email at flr@jps.net or by telephone at area code 530-265-9462. Full Logic Reverse is produced at FLR Studios in Nevada City, California, USA. Our music is by Rick Payne. We hope you'll join us next time for another edition of Full Logic Reverse.